I have two passages of scripture that I'm interested in the way they fit together. One is from Exodus chapter 33. The other is from Hebrews chapter 4. I'll read from Exodus first. Moses is talking to God, breaking in on verse 12 of chapter 33 of Exodus. I'm interested in the 14th verse and how it relates to the 11th verse of chapter 4 of Hebrews. "See, thou dost say to me, bring up this people, but thou thyself hast not let me know whom thou wilt send with me. Moreover, thou hast said, I have known you by name, and you have also found favor in my sight. Now therefore, I pray thee, if I have found favor in thy sight, let me know thy ways, that I may know thee, so that I may find favor in thy sight. Consider, too, that this nation is thy people." And the Lord said, "My presence shall go with you, and I will give you rest." Then he said to him, "If thy presence does not go with us, do not lead us up from here. For how then can it be known that I have found favor in thy sight, I and thy people? Is it not by thy going with us, so that I and thy people may be distinguished from all the other people who are upon the face of the earth?" And the Lord said to Moses, "I will also do this thing of which you have spoken, for you have found favor in my sight, and I have known your name." Verse 21, "And the Lord said, Behold, there is a place by me, and you shall stand there on the rock." Then from Hebrews chapter 4, just three verses, 9, 10, and 11. "There remains, therefore, a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For the one who has entered his rest has himself also rested from his works, as God did from his. Let us, therefore, be diligent to enter that rest, lest anyone fall through following the same example of disobedience." My grandson, Ben, is going down the tubes. He's becoming a diehard Bruins fan. This last week, through the magnanimity of one of his uncles, actually it was given to him, he got tickets to go and see his first Bruins game at the Garden. Of course, Ben didn't go by himself, and I didn't get to go with him. But Boston at night is no place for a little boy of 5 going on 6. And if you've ever attended any sporting event at the Garden, you know that that's no place for the timid or the delicate. I've been offered marijuana in there. I've had beer spilled on me. I wonder why I ever go. Ben began his night by spontaneously praying for a parking place. Whoever took him was foolish enough to drive his truck in. Ben has never heard me pray for a parking place. I pray under my breath, if I ever do. Amazingly, when he finished his prayer, he looked up, and his prayer was answered. There was a place, parking, $9. But the person that was accompanying thought that had to be an answer to prayer, so in they went. Ben introduced himself more or less to everybody in his section. He thought it was like church, and he was right at home. But the thing that really appealed to him most was the intermission between first and second period, where Bobby Orr Now, you people may remember the Saints, but in his family, they remember Bobby Orr. Came down and took slap shots at one of the media figures. And he didn't stop them all with his glove. And when he got one in the middle, it made Ben real happy. That was the best part of the game for him. About in the middle of the second period, Ben decided that he'd had enough hockey. And so he put his head in his dad's lap on one side, and he put his feet in the lady's lap on the other side. She didn't seem to mind. And he just checked out. For some reason, his dad thought it was about time to go home then. And Ben never woke up when he was put into bed that night. It's wonderful to have such a approach to life, a simple trust. It's wonderful when that trust isn't violated. I know Ben and hockey are a far cry from Moses in the text. But there's some connection here. Moses is a big, in terms of importance, a big man. Moses is very smart. And Moses has accomplished the impossible by obeying God. Nobody has ever pulled off what Moses pulled off. But now Moses is daunted. He is over his head. He's begun a great task, and he never thought he'd pull it off, and then he did. Now he doesn't see how in the world he can complete it. And so he begins to pray. And that part of that prayer that I read there, the full prayer, which I read apart, goes something like this. Lord, you're so good, you're so great. Please show me how to go on from here. That's not a bad prayer. But God answers back, first, I need to show you, before I show you how, I need to remind you who. And God's reply to Moses and his prayer for guidance said two things that we can take as our own, take it home this morning. He said to Moses in the first place, my presence shall go with you. When you're seeking to do my will, when you're trying to obey me, you are never simply on your own. And then he said, the second thing, my presence, I will give you rest. When we're conscious that God is near and everything's all right between us, there may be turmoil, there may be stress, but somehow there is an inner assurance. And again, we need to go into that assurance. Again and again, we need to find that place that God said, there is a place near to me. And the part I didn't read, God instructed Moses. And he said, I'm going to do something special for you now. He said, if I would ever let you look me in the face, you'd die. But I'm going to get you as near to me as possibly can, you possibly can. And he said, I'm going to put you in the rock, in a cleft of the rock, and I'm going to cover the rock with my hand, whatever that means, God's hand. And he said, then I'm going to pass by, and I'll let you see my glory. Somehow, when God revealed himself to Moses, that at least was the beginning of all the answer that Moses had. Now, God wasn't saying that Moses shouldn't know how. God was not saying that he shouldn't take a crash course in managing huge migrations or whatever crash courses there were. But he's saying, first of all, there's a place near me. Question comes to mind, was the place near God just this one-time thing? And it was a time of great reassurance. Maybe that is one of the real purposes of what the holiness people have called across the years the second work of grace. It is important that we have those times of consecration until we wait and know that we are in the presence of God and that all we have is His, and really what we want more than anything is His presence. I haven't really had much chance to report on my Sunday away in Kansas City at that theology conference. It was really nice. But one of the things that I enjoyed was General Superintendent Lee M. Haynes of the Wesleyan Church just challenging us to remember that we're not preaching in the 19th century or the 18th century or even in the middle of the 20th century. And he said a lot of these words that we've used in holiness terminology so long really don't compute, perhaps. Not to throw them out for our purposes, but he says this second, what we call a second work of grace, he calls an intensifying moment in our sanctification. And perhaps we need those one time. We do need those intensifying moments. And we do need a crisis where God reveals Himself to us and somehow showers us with His glory. But God, as a person, His presence became a way of life with Moses. And instead of just being a one-time blessing, this one-on-one walk with God became the hallmark of Moses' leadership. And you read through there, again and again, crises would come. And Moses would take his brother Aaron and they'd go to the tent of meeting and get on their face before God and say, "What are we going to do?" One place in the scripture, God is speaking to someone else and he says, "I've spoken with visions and I've spoken in other ways with other people, but with Moses, I speak face to face. Behold, there's a place by me," he said to Moses. And in our New Testament covenant time, is there such a place near to God for everyone? Is that what Hebrews 4 is saying? There remains a rest for the people of God, so that even though we're 5 years old in the Boston Garden and we don't really know the way home, that we just have a good time and we're free, and when we get ready we can go to sleep, so that we can say, "Oh God, how?" And God says, "Just a minute, who? Is there a place near to God for me and you?" Robert Coles is a Harvard teacher. He's an author. He's a psychiatrist specializing in what makes children tick, children's psychiatry. And Robert Coles came to faith, or at least was profoundly changed, as he watched the reality of the rest of God, the rest that God's presence provides in the lives of children, and particularly in one six-year-old girl named Ruby. Ruby, 6 years old, had tremendous occasion for stress. It's kind of a circuitous route how I came to reread this. Once again, I was out at that conference and someone mentioned Steinbeck's Travels with Charlie, and I hadn't read it for a while. And I got it out of the library here, and John Steinbeck took his dog Charlie in a pickup truck with a camper on the back. Drove it around the country. Wrote a book about it. It's very fascinating. Steinbeck is hardly a theologian, comes from a Christian perspective. But when he got to New Orleans, This is 1960. He saw what Robert Coles was watching. Perhaps they were there the same day. But Ruby was 6 years old, and she was black. And she was attending what had been a white school by court order. She was the only black child in the school. As a matter of fact, she was the only child in the school, for everybody else withdrew. Every day, 50 to 75 people would come morning and evening to hurl venom and unprintable words at this little six-year-old girl. They told her they wished she would die. They told her that they were going to kill her. And this went on day after day. And Steinbeck was coming through, and he described this in Travels with Charlie. And his description is powerful, and it's almost nauseating. He got physically sick. Well, I got to thinking, I've got an old copy of Christianity Today up in my study. I've set aside because it's so special to me. And Robert Coles saw that same scene. He was in New Orleans in 1960 on personal business. Matter of fact, he was going to a psychiatrist himself and being psychoanalyzed. But he was fascinated with the stress of this situation. He was clinically interested. He'd studied children in stress right here in Boston, and he thought, this is a classic example of somebody in stress. I want to get acquainted with Ruby. And he did. And over a period of days and weeks and months, he was a guest in the Bridges home, Ruby Bridges, father and mother. And he interviewed this little girl in depth. And to his amazement, he found that Ruby and her family were sustained and upheld by a very real and profound peace. He couldn't believe it. He said, this is not what I would expect. I'll find hidden stress here. And he came almost grudgingly to realize that the peace was genuine. I wish I had time to read the whole article to you, but here's some verbatim dialogue. Robert Coles recorded in 1960. Ruby's teacher had told Robert Coles that morning that Ruby had spoken to these people on the sidewalk that were shouting at her. And he was very interested. He wondered, what did she say? I asked her, Ruby, how was your day today? She said, it was okay. I was talking to your teacher today, and she told me, she asked you about something when you came to school early this morning. I don't remember, Ruby said. Your teacher told me she saw you talking to people in the street. Oh, yes. I told her I wasn't talking to them. I was just saying a prayer for them. Ruby, you pray for the people there? Oh, yes. Really? Yes. I said, why do you do that? Because they need praying for, she answered. Do they? Oh, yes. Ruby, why do you think they need you to pray for them? Because I should. Why? Because I should. Then Coles continues, Ruby's mother came into the room. She had heard this line of inquiry, and she said, we tell Ruby that it's important that she pray for the people. She said that Ruby had the people on a list and prayed for them at night. I said, Ruby, you pray for them at night too? Oh, yes. Why do you do that? Well, because they need praying for. Mrs. Bridges told me Ruby had been told in Sunday school to pray for the people. I later found that the minister in their Baptist church also prayed for the people, publicly, every Sunday. I said to Mrs. Bridges, and then to her husband later, "You know, it strikes me that that is a lot to ask of Ruby. I mean, given what she's going through." And they looked at me very confused. "We're not asking her to pray for them because we want to hurt her or anything," said Mrs. Bridges. "But we think that we all have to pray for people like that. And we think Ruby should too." And then she looked at me and said, "Don't you think they need praying for?" "Yes, I agree with you there," I said. "But I still think it's a little much to ask Ruby to pray for them." I have to break off the verbatim there, but Robert Coles marveled that he, as a trained child psychiatrist, could not pick up any devastating symptoms of tension in the Bridges home. And then he went on to say in that article how he was what we would call convicted because he had neglected the connection between the study of justice and ethics and fairness and helping people, the connection between that and the humble practice of living by the words of Jesus. There's a place near to me, and we all have access to this rest of faith. To be honest, I don't know if I could had that simple, profound faith of the Bridges family. Some of us are so smart that God can't get through and teach us true wisdom. But the promise of our text is very direct and clear. Look at it again with me here. "There remains then a rest for the people of God. Let us therefore make every effort to enter that rest." It's not a rest from labor. It's not a rest from work. It's not a promise of an easy life. It's not a promise that people won't spit at you and call you names and wish you were dead. It isn't even a promise you won't die. Last I knew, the death rate was 100%. But it's the same answer that Moses got when he asked God for a crash course in how to manage the multitude. Remember, God's reply to Moses had two things that we can take as our own. He said, "My presence will go with you." When you're doing my will, you're not on your own. And he said, "My presence will give you rest." And when we're conscious that God is near, and all's right between us, we can lay ourselves down and sleep and trust he's going to take us through.